Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Please welcome accomplished pitcher and popular broadcaster, Steve Stone.
Yes.
Steve Stone.
But I tried to convince Rick Hahn that he was injury prone, and Rick kept telling me he wasn't. And I said, well, when a guy gets hurt once or twice every year, to me at least, that's injury prone.
Cy Young Award winner.
By the way, next time you go to talk about Ozzy, call me a legend, will you please?
I always call you the legend.
Noel, you're the legend. Don't forget.
Hey.
Okay.
Now, I always address Steve Stone as the legend because that is fitting. I mean, 55 years of Major League Baseball, you get legendary status, my friend.
We'll give Ozzy that another 30, 40 years on the job.
Chicago White Sox television analyst.
Steve Stone, you said it. Before the first pitch, you felt good.
Thought this would be the one that you would tell your grandchildren about the night they turned it around.
Got him looking, strike three! And the White Sox get a 7-5 win here in Cleveland to take game two of the series.
And for Michael Kopech, who went out there with a two-inning save, what you might be seeing is a guy who has ascended to the closer role.
Hey, I want to be a rock star.
Oh, I want to be a rock star.
With Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Steve Stone joins the Parkins and Spiegel Show right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Hello, Stoney. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Spiegs. And how am I going to congratulate Danny Parkins on his new book if he's not here today?
You can do it. Just go ahead and we'll clip and paste. Pretend he's here. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, Danny, congratulations on your new book. Clip and paste that.
Oh, we will. We will. Yeah, no, it's cool, man. It's cool. It's all about Division III hoops, and Pipeline to the Pros is doing very well. So thank God. Thank you for him. In absentia, we've got Luis Robert Jr. and Yoan Moncada news that we can share. Chris Getz said about 20 minutes ago that things are more optimistic than they thought of Moncada. They think he will be back this season after the All-Star break, and that Luis Robert Jr. is trending toward a six-week absence. So that's better news than perhaps expected for Luis Robert Jr., don't you think?
Well, it certainly is, actually, for both, because we envision the fact that Yoan probably wouldn't be back. And with Luis Robert, he means so much to this team that when he's out there, number one, you don't have to worry about anything defensively. And also, he's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, as we saw a whole lot last year and some in the early going this year. So when they get back, things will look a whole lot better. And right now, you can't really obsess about the guys who are not here, because quite obviously, if they're not here, they can't help you. So you concentrate on the guys who are here. And these guys just have to try to go out, pick up the slack on a daily basis. But I listened to one of your interviews today, and I think it was with Curtis Granderson, when he talked about you can't think about winning 5 or 10 games in a row. The only thing you can think about is winning your game today. And when you do that and you string together a bunch of good performances where things are starting to go right for the guys, all of a sudden you find that you might have won 4 of 5 or 6 of 8. And that's how you go about digging yourself out of the hole that the Sox have already dug themselves into.
Curtis Granderson on with our midday show a little bit earlier today.
Well, and having that granular sort of look at things, that can be beneficial to the folks in the clubhouse, but then I think also can be beneficial to fans in a season like this for the White Sox, that, you know, there's no real reason to have big, broad expectations for what this season could mean. I'm wondering for you, what are your observations here early? Are there sort of inklings of hope in the performance of any individual so far?
Well, I take a look at the progress that Michael Kopech has made, because, you know, in spring training, he started out at the beginning of spring training to think he was going to be in the starting rotation, or at least given a shot to do that. And after watching him for a bit and then looking at his history, a couple of years back when I think 40 or 41 of his performances came as a reliever and only 4 came as a starter, he had a pretty good ERA. And I think we saw in Cleveland, we saw what Michael Kopech can be. And the question is, can he continue to do that on a daily basis? He said it's the first time since, well, a few years that he actually had the velocity that he wanted to have. And consequently, you saw what happened. If he got it near, nobody could touch it. I mean, he came in, and I talked with the broadcasters from the Cleveland Ball Club, and it's like when he threw the first couple of pitches, they went, wow, this is a different guy. And he felt like it. He looked like it. And that's what he can be. The question that we have to ask is, can he be that maybe two or three times out of 4 or 5 days? If he can do that, you can start thinking about the fact that he might be able to close. And I read the quotes of Pedro where he said he doesn't want to call him a closer per se because the connotation is a three-out save kind of guy because there's a lot of those guys around. He feels that Kopech can pick up a few innings. We've seen it twice. He's had two saves. One was a five-out save. The other was a six-out save. So that's been really encouraging to me. And watching him go out there, the look that he has, I think if he can continue to do that, the Sox might find themselves with a guy that has a whole lot more value than they thought he might have had when spring training started.
Thinking back to when he was just an up-and-coming prospect and Michael Kopech was throwing triple digits and it was really exciting, and then he got here and part of the immediate sort of approach was maybe back off of that a little bit. You don't need to hit 101 and 102. Now we've dealt through, you know, a few injuries and everything else. At this point, getting into his mid to late 20s and he's had some procedures and now he's big and strong and old and presumably maybe more durable than he was when he was younger, is it when you saw 101, 102 on the gun, did you flinch at all? Did it concern you in the least?
No, because I know that he was capable of doing that. The fact is he maintained those velocities. I mean, it would sink to 99, but it would get back up to 101 in a hurry. He hit 102 one time. He's not going to be able to pitch at 102, but if he can throw 98 or above and show the life on the fastball that he had, and that's really the key because it surprises you how many guys actually can get to triple digits in the major leagues. But then when you watch the ball itself, you realize that it might be 101, but it's dead straight. And normally if it's dead straight, these guys will catch up to it, especially if they have a chance to see it a few times. But if it has some late life, that's what you're looking for. And that's what Michael had that night in Cleveland, the late life where guys just couldn't catch up to it. And he was just overwhelming. So, yeah, that's one of the bright spots.
You know, Steve, this I love it. I get excited at the velocity, but the backstory and the feelings underneath are this insatiable lust for velocity around baseball that is, frankly, seeming to be the biggest factor that has destroyed the ulnar collateral ligaments of all these guys. I mean, I know there's spin. There's also the specialization. There's the fact that perhaps the UCL doesn't fully develop until age 26. Like, all of these things factor in. But it's just the numbers are there. The guys who throw the hardest over recent seasons are the ones who are most often getting hurt. So I don't know if that toothpaste ever goes back into the tube in baseball, will it?
Well, if you take a look at the development process of the Cleveland Guardians, you'll realize that what they do has the ability to sustain itself because what they take is they take pitchers, they're not overwhelmingly big. They're not, you know, 6'7", 6'8". Not saying there's anything wrong with that because occasionally you get a 6'6 guy like Chris Sale who hangs around for a while and has some wonderful years. But for the most part, the Guardians pick guys anywhere from 6'1 to 6'3". They have fastballs 92, 93. They might get them an extra mile an hour or so. But what they do is they teach their guys actually how to pitch. Seeing as the avocation is called pitching, it's not called throwing. My feeling is if you pitch, then you're going to be in pretty good shape to sustain it. And you ask any hitter, their eyes are like computers. A hitter can see 98, and he knows exactly what it takes at 98 miles an hour to get his hands to the point where just out in front you make contact. You hit the ball pretty hard, and if it stays at 98 and a pitcher misses his location, then he's going to get hit awfully hard. The question is, are you better served putting a little something on that fastball or taking something off? And the question has the answer has always been and will always be, you're better off taking something off. Because if you can see, let's say a pitcher just has 95, and I say just because that's kind of what we're looking at these days. Let's say he has 95. And a hitter knows 95, he knows exactly where the hands have to be, And he can also move his leg but keep his hands back and still hit that, especially if it's off speed. But if you're changing speeds consistently on that fastball, and a guy has 95 and a hitter knows you have 95, and now you see 91 and sinking down and in, you see why the two-seam fastball has made a resurgence in baseball. Because Driveline taught the four-seam fastball, throw everything as hard as you can, spend five innings out there, and somebody's going to come in. The question is, when you do that over a fairly prolonged period of time, will your arm hold up? We have found conclusively the answer is no. And when you read the article and the fact that you mentioned 26 when that ligament matures,
yeah,
that's the article that Andrews of Birmingham, Alabama, wrote and contributed to.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the fact that it used to be major league guys getting the majority of the Tommy Johns, and now it has switched. It's young guys who their arms have not developed yet, and they're throwing big spin sliders and curveballs and fastballs as hard as they can, and eventually it gives way, and that's where he's doing the majority of his Tommy Johns. If you have that, well, then obviously you're going to come back with all the velocity you had before, but eventually if you continue those high spin rates and those high velocities, especially on sliders with depth, you're going to wind up getting hurt. That's just the way it's been. That's probably the way it always will be. And I prefer a guy who can pitch as opposed to a guy who can throw, and I think they'll last longer.
One more thing on this stuff. I saw this the other day. Of the last 14 Cy Young Award winners in both leagues, okay, 28 different awards, how many of them are currently active and pitching in MLB? The answer is two. It's Corbin Burns and Blake Snell. That's it. Everybody else is either retired or hurt or on their way back or unsigned, like Zach Greinke. Well,
Blake Snell might have the whole idea of this down pat, which is, you know, never see the eighth inning. You're a starting pitcher who never sees the eighth inning, but you won two Cy Young Awards. You got paid a great deal of money to be there, and he stays healthy, takes the ball, only he never goes deep into games because his control is not particularly good, and he winds up just leaving because he's out of gas. And apparently that's the era we're heading into. But I prefer, in trying to save your bullpen, which is the key to all this, because I've talked to great major league managers, they tell me the same thing. The best pitching staff, the best bullpen doesn't win when it comes late season and you need to put together a winning streak. He told me that the healthiest bullpen wins. And what separates the men from the boys, as far as a manager is concerned, is a guy that can keep that pitching staff healthy as he gets to the meaningful games in the middle of August down through September. Keeping that healthy is the key. And to do that, you have to make sure that you don't overuse guys. It is an art to manage and to manipulate your bullpen. Some guys do it better than others, but the guys who do it real well are usually the guys who are there in September.
Well, let's wish good health for Garrett Crochet, as hard as he throws and as enjoyable as he has been. Steve, have a great weekend. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a good show, and I'll talk to you down the road.
That's Steve Stone of the Chicago White Sox. Isn't that crazy? Two guys that's from wild. The last 14 years of Cy Young on both the American League and National League side are currently active in pitching. That's it.
Just I mean, crazy. Think about the way that in youth baseball and just, you know, teenagers in general became kind of the in vogue thing to just start having those UCL procedures early, just almost kind of forcing guys
to get
them right off the bat.
Look, Anthony, stop. Okay, we got a break. Shane's been asking, and your discipline is an issue.
I don't look at Shane.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's my fault. 670, the score is where you are. It's Parkins and Spiegel. It's time for polls position. Hardcore football analyses. Let's get into the brain of Anthony Heron next on 670 The Score.
Mullinghaw, Chicago's number one most listened to sports morning show. 5:30 till 10 a.m.
John is in Joliet. Hey, John, how are you, bud?
Hey, good morning, guys. If I've never said this before, I'm going to say it now. Thank you both, because I start work at 5:30 in the morning, fire up the semi, take a sip of coffee, and you guys are always there to entertain me throughout my morning. So, thank you, guys.
Thank you, thanks, John.
Now. Mully and Haw, mornings 5:30 till 10 a.m. on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
This segment is brought to you by Metra. The average annual commuting cost in Chicago is over $4,000. Parking, gas, maintenance, it all adds up. By taking Metra, you could get that $4,000 back while communicating quickly and comfortably. What would you do with all that extra money? Metra lets you drive less and do more.